So welcome to the Heart Health 101. That's kind of what this is, Dr. Brian Walsh. And we're going to talk about some of the facts surrounding the heart health issue. Some things about to help you understand, like, what is it when somebody has heart disease, right? Because that could be several things that people have when they have heart disease. And the way it manifests does make a difference. The sad thing is that it's still the number one leading cause of death in the U.S. Wow. This is like one of the most preventable diseases there are, that along with diabetes. Hmm. And it's still the number one cause of death. It just blows me away because it is so preventable for the most part. I mean, the vast majority of it is diet and lifestyle. Hmm. So it's just really sad that, and that's why I always like to say my quote here, right? The doctor of the future will give no medicine. Well, his interest is patients in the care of the human frame and diet and the cause and prevention of disease, right? That was by Thomas Edison, you know, 100 years plus ago. And he knew the value of lifestyle and making sure the spine works and preventing it in the first place, right, instead of medicine. I mean, medicine has its place. I'm not against it, but when it's appropriate, not all the time. Mm-hmm. I mentioned still the leading cause of death. Just a rough estimate of like the over-the-counter stuff that people get and then prescription medication is like in the $30 to $40 billion range year per year of stuff. So it's a very lucrative industry, and as many of these pharmaceutical things are, which keeps them going, you know what I mean? Because it helps symptoms, which people like, and that doesn't require a lot of effort, but it's not a solution, right? Because you can still have issues afterwards. So you can break it down into like four or five major things that go wrong with the heart. The one we think of probably the most is the coronary artery disease. Those are the arteries that go around the heart, right? That's the main blood supply that goes to the heart. And when people have a bypass or open heart surgery or a stent, that's what they're doing. They're trying to bypass those or put a stent to open up the blood flow. Because if you don't got all those flowing well, that's when the heart muscle can die, right? And once you've had damage to the cells, that's irreparable. It will not function as well. You know, your heart won't function as well. That's probably the biggest problem is the coronary artery disease problem. The other area that a lot of people have, and you see it the commercials on TV, is atrial fibrillation, and that's when the heart loses rhythm, right? It's the atrium part of the heart that does that. There's other kind of arrhythmias as well, but that's probably one of the second leading causes of the problems that people can have with the heart. And it can be life-threatening. If you have that on a regular basis, it increases your risk of stroke. So that's why they like to try to do something about it. Unfortunately, they usually just medicate it. Mm-hmm. Medicate it, or if they can't get a good result there, they'll try to do an ablation where they burn one of your pacemaker nodes. But that doesn't always work, you know, mm-hmm. So sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. The valves, right, you got all these different valves in the heart, that's the other area where people start having issues. Either they get weak and they're not closing properly. They can also get these growths and things around the valve, which cause it not to totally seal. Mm-hmm. So then when that happens, you don't get the full pumping action, right, of the valve in the heart, and that's when your function goes down, you know. And then the muscle itself, right? So your heart's a big muscle, it's a very powerful muscle, and the muscle itself can get diseased. And then I mentioned if you have the artery problem around the heart and you lose blood flow to a part of the muscle, then it's like there's disease to the muscle now, you know, because you've damaged it. Mm-hmm. And what that does is because all those cells are contracting together, you know, they have a rhythm. Is when one part of it dies, then it's not contracting the same. And then that can lead to the valve problems, and then you're in trouble. So, and there's surgeries that help some of these things, the heart disease, the muscle problem, they can't do much about that. That's just something they can't do much about. But those are the main categories that where trouble comes in, right? And some people have more than one of those. And when they say someone has congestive heart failure, that's usually a combination of all of those together. And what ends up happening is there's something called the ejection fraction, which is an ultrasound they can measure of the heart, of how well it's pumping. And ideal range for that is like, I think it's like 55 to 65, 70, something like that is the ejection fraction rate. And when someone has congestive heart failure, that number starts going down and lower and lower. Mm-hmm. And above 40, your body can still do okay. When it starts going below that, you start getting in trouble. And that's when people start getting fluid in their lungs, edema in their legs, and they're in trouble. Right. Unfortunately, the medicine really doesn't have much to do. You know, they'll try to give you the different rhythm drugs and stuff, and that usually doesn't help, blood thinners. But for that congestive heart failure category, once it gets to that point, there's a valve problem too, then they're just like, we'll just watch you, you know, wait and see. But there's natural things you can do, especially in the early stages, that can really help that we'll talk about. Because there's other things going on, right? There's always a cause. There's always a cause. And the number one thing that I mentioned is diet and lifestyle. It really is. You know, we've gone from a whole food diet to a processed food diet over the course of 100 years, mm-hmm. especially the last 50. And those foods are not conducive for feeding your body, right? Especially the trans fats. You know, you've heard of that term, trans fatty acids. That's the one that has the word hydrogenated, you know, mm-hmm. or partially hydrogenated mm-hmm. after it. And those are man-made fats, and the cells don't use those like good oils like fish oil or flax oil or nuts and seeds and avocado. Just totally different. And what happens is all your cells need fat. That's part of your cells, and it makes it with whatever you're eating. So if you're eating all this processed food with garbage fat, then that starts having issues with your heart, arteries, and everything else, actually. Not enough fruits and vegetables. I mentioned the processed thing, right? You know, where people are just eating tons of processed food. Those are kind of the big, you know, we've gone away from a whole food diet to a junk food diet. Mm-hmm. That's like just not good. Of course, being overweight increases your risk of any disease. Heart disease is one of them. Mm-hmm. Smoking, and some of these things everyone knows, but like they still do it, and it's mm-hmm. a risk factor, you know. So lack of exercise, because it's a muscle, so if you exercise it, it gets stronger, right? Get stronger, it works better, all those type of things. And then what I think has become one of a big factor the past 20 years is the stress factor, mm-hmm. right? Because stress can change the rhythm of the heart, wow. because of cortisol and all those different things. And then it can cause the blood vessels to constrict, right? And when the blood vessels start constricting all over your body, that can increase blood pressure. So that's one of the ways the blood pressure goes up, because it changes the rhythm, and then it can constrict blood vessels, and that's not a good combo. So, and blood pressure high, over time, it depends on the person and their weaknesses and stuff, but then you can have kidney issues or other things, you know, that aren't good for you. And it can enlarge the heart faster. We don't want that to happen. Those are more the lifestyle things. Medical reasons. Diabetes is a huge risk factor for heart disease, right? It's just because when the blood sugar is high, it's very hard on the blood vessels. That's why people get these different problems in their legs and stuff, because they start getting the blood vessels become weaker from the diabetes. There's a couple things that go up in your blood for other reasons. I have a different health talk about. C-reactive protein. Is a protein they can measure in the blood, and that can go up from like infections and different things, the poor lifestyle. And the higher that is, the more inflammation you have in your body. And the heart doesn't like inflammation either, so that's not a good one. The other one is homocysteine. Again, another inflammation marker, especially for your arteries. They found when that's higher, the homocysteine value in your body, in your blood, you're more likely to have heart problems than high cholesterol. So it's not about high cholesterol. It really isn't. It's not about high cholesterol. And there's a good way to get an assessment of the arteries around your heart. I think it should be part of your medical testing, like when you hit 40. Got a coronary artery calcium score. It's an imaging test, non-invasive. Even if you have to pay cash for the thing, I think it's less than a couple $100. But it tells you the amount of calcium buildup around the arteries of the heart. And if that's high, very likely you're going to have clogged arteries around your heart at some point.
What causes high calcium?
And that's many different things, the diet and the lifestyle, it's a combination. So the original thing was they thought cholesterol was clogging the arteries and that was the problem, right? Well, that was totally debunked, but yet they still tell you that and still pushed cholesterol medication, right? It is so far from the truth, it's on the label. So what happens is there's an injury to the arteries that go around your heart through inflammation. They've proven that different bacteria and viruses can, when they get in your body, they can affect those blood vessels around the heart. It creates inflammation inside the blood vessel. And the body doesn't like that. And so sometimes in the repair process, the cholesterol is used as part of that repair mechanism, right? Mm. But if it's continuing on and on and on, then you get buildup, right? And then you put some junky diet on there and lots of other bad habits, and then it just keeps building. So it's not like the cholesterol caused the problem. The cholesterol was trying to repair something that was broken. And it's just a natural process. But it's the inflammation from whatever, whether it was an infection or years of a junk food diet that raises your inflammation in your body, because that's what happens. Then you can get, and calcium sometimes is part of that buildup. Now, there are some people that have what I call metabolic problems, right? Where they don't regulate calcium well in their body. And those people are typically prone to kidney stones too, right? So that's usually, that can be controlled sometime with diet and changing their minerals. So that's another reason why that can happen. But it is a combination of those things. But that test, the calcium score test, can, I've helped people save their life by having them get that test. Wow. Because their numbers were high and they got checked out, and one of the guys needed an actual open heart bypass. Yeah. Because his was to the point where it couldn't be stented. Wow. But you can get stuff early and keep someone's life around. So definitely a good test worth investing in for that one. Also, that homocysteine I mentioned is very bad. And then when your triglycerides are high, that is actually worse than if the cholesterol is high. Because they found that the higher the triglyceride, that is more likely to cause heart problems, not the higher the cholesterol. Cholesterol is just along for the ride. It's really not the bad guy, you know, it's really. And you need cholesterol. Like, you couldn't make your hormones in your body without cholesterol. Because cholesterol is used to make hormones, so. And the unfortunate thing that happens with these folks, and I see it to people, is they start putting them on these statins, cholesterol medication, and then if they survive the muscle pain and aches and fatigue and that kind of stuff, they can cause other problems, right? And they've shown that this is something that you should ask your doctor about. Because the lower your cholesterol is as we get older, the higher your risk of stroke. So a lot of people believe that as we get a little older, a little higher cholesterol is protective for your body, not bad for you. But the triglycerides, you do have to watch, because that one, it's a different kind of fat in your body, and that tends to raise higher in some people, and it's more important to get that down. And usually the easiest way to get that down is by reducing your carbohydrate intake. It's not your fat intake, it's your carbohydrate, because if you're not using all your carbs, it's easier to convert to triglycerides. So a lot of times when you get rid of that, then it'll get better.
I've always heard if the good fat was higher, that you didn't really have to worry. Is it the HDL, the LDL?
Well, it's not that you don't have to worry. It's that if the HDL, which is the better of the two, I mean, you need all of the cholesterols, right? You need them. But there's actually a ratio. It's called the ratio that's important. And it's when you take the total cholesterol and divide it by that HDL cholesterol number. The 5 is the dividing point. If it's around 5, then you have average risk of heart disease, basically, when you divide that. If it's below, then your risk starts going down. So I've had people that had 250 for their cholesterol, but their HDL was 80 or 90, so their fraction was 3-something, and they're actually lower risk for heart disease, according to the statistics. But if the triglycerides are high, that's another factor, you know, that's still risky. And so that's why you just can't go. Unfortunately, most of the primary care doctors are so busy, they don't evaluate, they don't read their own research, and they look at the total cholesterol. And they look at their LDL, the bad one. And if they're out of range, they're going to put you on cholesterol medication. Most of them do not look at the ratio. They used to put that calculation on all blood work, that ratio. Not all labs do that anymore. So I always do it for my patients to show them that they're not in the bad way yet. But if people's cholesterol is high, the total, and their good one's low, and it pushes them close to 5, then I'm going to tell them I'm concerned, because now they're having, you know, imbalance that way, which can be corrected with diet and some supplements down the road. But yeah, they just don't look at the whole picture, unfortunately. And someone could have a low cholesterol, and their homocysteine is way out of control, and they're at really high risk for heart disease. So they never even test it unless you ask them to. So, man, that's the other crazy thing. But what I've seen in some people, if you drive them too low on their total cholesterol, especially below 150, they start having memory problems. It starts getting worse. They can't think as well. So I warn them and tell them, I recommend you talk to your doctor about getting off these. When it's around 150 or so, it's too low. You don't need that low, I'm telling you. I mean, it used to be in the 60s and 70s, if it was below 240, they like didn't bat an eye. So they weren't any concerned about it. Now if it's 205, they're wanting to put you on cholesterol medication. It's like, oh, well. So things like blood pressure medication, you know, all these different blood thinners, there are times when those have to be used, you know, but ideally you'd like to try to get to the causes, the lifestyle, all those different factors, so you can correct it and wean people off that. You know, that's just, they should be a Band-Aid until you fix the problem. Usually they don't, unfortunately. And like I said, there is a time to do a stent or a bypass, you know, to save somebody's life. I mean, I'm all for that. But after that, start changing everything, because they've proven if you do not change your lifestyle, say you get a stent in, right, in one of your arteries, within 5 to 7 years, you're coming back for another one if you don't change anything. And that's why there's a book called The Great Cholesterol Myth by Dr. Sinatra. And he did all kinds of research, you know, and he was a cardiologist, well-known cardiologist. And he had this epiphany, you know, that he'd do these bypasses and stents in 5 to 7 years, he saw them back. All of a sudden he's like, this isn't good. I'm not helping these people. So he totally turned his thing around and started doing lifestyle management and supplements and stuff with his patients. And now, I don't think he practices now. I think he's got an incredible website, and he writes and teaches people how to do this. And he like saw the light, so to speak, you know? But Dr. Sinatra, really good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, The Great Cholesterol Myth was one of the ones that he wrote.
And the endarterectomies that they do, they clean out everything, there again, if you don't change your lifestyle.
Correct. Yeah, it's usually coming back. If you do the Roto-Rooter things, is that what you're talking about, of the arteries? Yeah.
They did it in the legs and the arteries for my father, who had diabetes. Mm-hmm. And he stopped losing digits off of his toes.
Yeah, yeah, which is helpful.
Eventually, you know, within so many years, it did return.
Come back, yeah. Yep, you have to change the lifestyle. So the things that cause the problem, you change those, right? So if someone's got a horrible diet, then you go to something that's more natural, like a Whole30 diet, which is, it's a paleo-style diet, you know, that has mostly protein, fruits, and vegetables. You know, they eliminate grain, sugars, and just eat real food like our ancestors used to eat, you know, when they were nomads, kind of. Something that we don't do a lot of these days, but it has come back in popularity in the form of intermittent fasting, right? Where you usually skip breakfast. That's the easiest meal to do for adults. I don't recommend it for kids and teens, but adults it's fine. And when you only eat, you know, during like a 7 to 8 hour window, it puts you in a fasting mode during the other time. And it has lots of protection about making your cholesterol and triglycerides better. It can help with the inflammation in the body. So it's a very powerful way to reduce your calories a little bit. As long as you don't pig out on lunch and dinner, you know, for the, and it can lower your risk of heart disease by normalizing your blood, your blood fats. Of course, weight loss is going to help. No smoking. The kind of exercise I recommend, as long as you're okay with, like your joints are okay, your knees, is high intensity interval training, and that's where you go really fast, and then you go back down to a normal pace, really fast, go back down to a normal pace. But that high intensity interval training, or HIIT, they call it, is a very effective exercise technique. You can exercise less and get more benefits. They found that doing like 25 minutes of this is more effective than jogging for like an hour. So it's a really good way to get your workout without a lot of time. And if there's a lot of stress, you know, deep breathing, relaxation techniques, all these different things are really helpful to get that cortisol down, to relax your muscles, to relax the arteries that get constricted, and the blood vessels that cause the high blood pressure. And like I said, it actually helps change your rhythm, because the rhythm of the heart can get all out of balance.
I also heard that we don't, after a certain age, you don't, the B vitamins, we don't, you know, necessarily keep those in our body as easily.
Well, two things happen with the B vitamins is we don't absorb them enough, possibly, and or we don't get enough of them. And especially B12, because as we age, that does require fairly good digestion and stomach acid. And our stomach acids do naturally decline. And one of the main sources of B12 is protein, right, is meats and stuff. And so, and some older folks tend not to eat as much protein, which is not a good thing as they age, in my opinion. So
Will the enzymes help with that, especially?
They can, yes, digestive enzymes and hydrochloric acid, that can help with that. But different things, these are natural things that you can do. Of course, you have to change your lifestyle and exercise still. But coenzyme Q10, right, that's a supplement you can take that's very powerful for increasing the oxygen uptake in your heart. Fish or flax oils, because it reduces inflammation and helps the blood flow. Garlic has been shown in different things to help with the inflammation in the heart. So if you say your cholesterol stuff is out of balance and you just kind of want to bring your numbers down some and see how it works, red yeast rice is a natural statin. It's still considered a statin, believe it or not. It's a natural statin. So some people that have a problem with cholesterol medication or statins may react to red yeast rice with muscle pain, just like they would if they took the drug. So I don't use that as my remedy of choice for that kind of thing. I'd like to use other things in the diet. Because some people, they don't feel good when they do red yeast rice because it's still a statin. Now, in fact, the FDA was trying to pull it at one point from the market because of that. There's something called polycosanols. They're like in grapes and that kind of stuff. Wine, those different things.
Can I ask you a question? The processing of wine in this country, I believe a lot of it is very poor.
Yeah, it actually is, and it's really funny. The question was about processing a wine in the country. I watched this little documentary thing. It was very interesting. It covered the whole history of winemaking and everything. And in the U.S., they're allowed to use, it's up to like 70 different additives and flavorings and enhancers in the production of wine. I'm like, what?
What's the point?
Like, what's about that?
I'm very sensitive to a lot of chemicals,
and
like benzene they use to decaffeinate, you know, decaf coffee.
Well, and the other thing is they don't have to tell you that they use that.
No, but
so,
you can tell. Brain fog, it's hard.
So what this documentary showed or said is that the old world wines like Italy and those places, they don't do those kind of things. They still use old growing methods and techniques, and they don't put the additives in there. So yeah, unfortunately, like a lot of the California wines and these different things, I think even the Australian wines, they put all that junk in there. So it's pretty interesting. It's not quite as beneficial as it should be, you know.
Right.
Still have to watch the amount of it. And then minerals, you know, the different mineral complexes are very good. We mentioned the B complex vitamins are very effective. Now, some people, there's what they call methylated or active B vitamins. Your body takes the B vitamins from food and it breaks it down, right? And it's what they call methylates it and makes it so it's better to absorb. It's how you absorb it. Some people don't do that real well in their body for different reasons. And they need that active form already in this form, so they don't have to break it down. So a lot of times, especially if people are in their 50s or older, I just tell them to get the methylated form of B complexes, because you'll absorb it better and you really get more bang for your buck when you buy them in that form. And usually you notice it. And you usually just feel better when you take that form.
Especially older men.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I know several, down at Sebastian, different areas, there's a lot of retirement. Mm-hmm. And a gentleman was just being obnoxious in the line, you know, and his wife says, he's getting worse lately. And I just mentioned to her, he might need a supplement, you know.
Well, and one of the first things to rule out in dementia is B12 deficiency. Because older folks, that is one of the causes of the beginning of dementia is a B12 deficiency. So you can actually, if that's the source of it, you give them a supplement and they come back. So it's not real frequent, but it can be a source. But there's other things too. The energy, you know, they don't feel as good.
But is the injection a better way?
It absorbs faster when you get a shot of B12. But the methylated forms, they have actually shown that when you take high doses of the methylated form, over time, it's as effective as the shots.
Okay,
the shots will bring your numbers up faster, but over a length of time, I think it was 3 to 6 months, they were pretty even at that time when they did that. So, but like I said, it's really about getting to the cause, fixing the diet, the lifestyle, the stress, all those things, supplementing where you need to, and then you can reverse some of this stuff. I mean, you really can, especially the younger the person. It just takes time and discipline, which we don't always have a lot of, especially in America. Any other questions?
I started the formulas, you know, like the greens, and especially the, I do bone broth also, but the collagen.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's been something that's been missing.
Well, also, there's actually collagen is in your blood vessels. So that's part of the integrity of your blood vessels are collagen. So
it helps to assimilate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, people forget that too.
Would it be safe to say that because our soil is so depleted with pretty much everything, and our food as well, I mean, it's really not even an option anymore, it seems like, to not supplement?
For the most part, I would say yes. It's hard to get a balanced diet without supplementation. And preferably whole food supplementation, you know, that's more available, bioavailable, and you absorb it better. Especially the more stress you're under. Because when you're under stress, you really burn up your B vitamins and some of your minerals. And so people can get sicker because they're not absorbing or taking enough of them, and they're under high stress at the same time, so they're like burning the candle, you know, on both ends.
Cardiac symptoms.
Definitely.
She had to have a monitor. She's 30, and the stress she was under, you know.
Oh, yes, it kills.
Yeah.
It kills people, fortunately.
Which I can't imagine the stress levels nowadays between COVID, losing your job, losing your house, and whatever else they lost.
Families?
In 2020, I mean, by the time they're done, the level's got to be unbelievable.
Through the roof. Yeah. Yeah, I know, it's sad. Any other questions?
Can you get too much vitamin B?
So technically, yes, you can. It's harder because it is water soluble, so you do pee it out pretty quick. But there are people with the B12 and B6. Sometimes it'll cause nerve problems, you know, where they might get a little neuropathy. But you can just back down quickly, and usually within weeks it's back to normal. Yeah, it's more.
Is it true that under a lot of stress you burn up your Bs fast?
Yes, you do.
You can't really store them.
Correct, but you can overdo it, because I've seen people where they did too much, especially the B6, and they started having symptoms, and when we backed off, they were better. So, but it's harder to get overdo it on those. It's more things like vitamin D, vitamin E, vitamin K. Those are the ones that are fat soluble, so you store them really well. Mm. And you can OD on those, so to speak, you know. But again, you stop doing them for a while and it goes down and you'll be fine.
Is vitamin C potentially good also for cardiac?
Indirectly, because it also is involved in the collagen production, construction part of your body. And so with the blood vessels, it can, because some people, like if they bruise easily,
sometimes
that is a vitamin C problem, where they're not getting enough C and they're not, the collagen matrix in their skin becomes weak.
Okay.
So it tears and bruises.
And that's something they're looking into with COVID, the vitamin C high doses.
Oh yeah. It can help so many things. And intravenous IV vitamin C can really help people with cancer with that.
Mm.